Skip to the end.
Welcome to episode 21 of the Skip to the End podcast. As ever, I'm Ben.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Mark.
On today's episode, we're going to be reviewing brand new film Mad Max Fury Road. It was an interesting film, wasn't it, boys?
Looking forward to hearing what everyone's got to say.
Yeah, it's taken me a whole day just to put my thoughts into order, so that's going to be an interesting one. We've also got a topic this week, which is our top three actresses of all time. We're also going to be re-watching Scott Pilgrim versus the World. Brilliant film, can't wait to talk about that. And for the Skip Back in Time feature, we're going to be looking at 2009. So, let's get started. Topic this time round then is top three actresses. It's a tough one, this. I've really had to rack my brain for this.
Yeah, same.
And it was hard getting it down from 10 to 5 to 3. So, who wants to start the ball rolling? Mark?
I'll go straight in there. Emma Stone.
Okay.
Now, I wanted to pick someone that I really enjoy on screen, not because they're just good looking and eye candy. That's what I think a lot of people are doing. You know, I've seen a lot of responses and we'll come to them. But people are going to say Scarlett Johansson and all these babes that, you know, you think are fit. But I actually don't just find her attractive on screen. I think the performances she gives have always made me want to go and watch that film.
Sorry, have you been looking at my list? Just no. Saying about, like, just picking people they like the look of.
Although, one of the things I do like is that Mark has said that, and he's absolutely right, but in the tweets he's been putting out this week, he's used pictures of Jessica Alba.
Very true. But anyway, I think one of the first films I watched with her was Superbad, and I remember thinking, she is really funny, naturally, and she was up there with Jonas Hill and making me laugh a lot, and I thought, she's really, really good.
Jonas Hill.
And then I saw her in Easy A, which we talked about before, Zombieland, Crazy Stupid Love, really, really good films, a lot of comedies, but then we had Birdman recently, and that's when I saw the serious side of her and saw that she could actually put on a performance that's worthy of an Oscar nomination. And the thing I like about her is she's still very young. So we've seen the opportunities she's had to go to Marvel and Sony and do Spider-Man and stuff. So we've seen that side of her. But the next film she's working on is Lower, which is Cameron Crowe's new film. Now, he is all about the performances. He ain't just going to let some eye candy come on stage. He's going to sit there and make her deliver. She's going up against
Bradley Cooper, isn't it?
Bradley Cooper. Yeah. You know, this is going to be a love story and a performance that you've never seen before. And I wouldn't be surprised if we see another Oscar nomination. And I'm just excited for her future ahead of her. I think she's not going to do any old shit now. She's gone and done gangster films. She's done pretty much everything. She's nailed it.
The newest Woody Allen film as well.
Yeah.
She does a bit of everything. So she is great.
She excites me, you know. She makes me...
pretty she poor choice of words there, Mark.
She stimulates me.
Even worse.
No, I find her absolutely fascinating to watch on screen. She gives massive performances, and for me, out of all the modern-day actresses that we get to see, she excites me.
She's not in my list, but she is great. And I agree, the first thing I saw her in was Superbad as well. And I, you know, I had no idea who she was at the time, and I was like, who's this? This is one to watch. She's so good in that film. She has this kind of sort of deep, raspy voice that's really intriguing. Like, same as Scarlett Johansson, actually. She has a similar sort of thing. And it's really alluring, and she's a great actress, and I look forward to seeing what she does next.
She's in my list. She is actually in my list.
Cool.
I love Emma Stone as well. I echo everything Mark said. I'll also go on record to say that I don't think I've seen a film with her and that I haven't enjoyed.
Even the Spider-Man. Oh, you like the Spider-Man films, don't you?
Yeah. I didn't think they're as bad as everyone else does. Like is a very strong word. But no, like, Crazy Stupid Love. What a film!
I dig that film. I've said to girls that I like this film, and they've been surprised that it's something that I would enjoy. But no, I think it's a superb film.
Yeah, and just it kind of reinforced that. That was I saw her in Superbad. It was when I saw her in that. That's when it kind of cemented the fact that I think she's an amazing actress.
Yeah, she is.
So that's my pick as well then.
Fair enough. Should we move on to me then?
Yeah.
My first pick is going to go to Natalie Portman.
Brilliant.
putting aside Star Wars, because that wasn't her fault,
yeah,
she has been in so many great films and given so many good performances. A film that we watched, was it Homework that I had to watch a few shows back? I had to watch Leon, yeah, which I'd never seen. And she's so, so good in that. And she was a kid. What was she, 10? Yeah. 11, something, yeah, like that. She was a kid. And then you've got things like V for Vendetta, Black Swan. Black Swan's an unbelievably great film.
For me, that's her strongest performance.
Yeah.
By far.
Yeah.
She's been nominated for 2 Oscars, and she won for that one. It's the best work she's done. But the thing I love about her as well is that she can do this highbrow stuff like Black Swan, and the other film she was nominated for was Closer. But then she can also go and star in a Marvel film.
Yeah.
She can also, you know, go and have fun in Thor. She's got a great range. She can do everything. And she's just one of those people that mesmerises me when I watch her on screen.
Yeah, and just something that we've just said there about Black Swan being her best performance. Mm. My instant reaction to that was, oh, yes, by far. And that is saying something, because she has put in some unbelievable performances. Yeah. And I still think Black Swan is miles ahead of anything else she's done.
Yeah.
I mean, Leon, you said, when she was, you know, a young kid, she was unbelievable.
Yeah, she's one of those that you could tell, even as a child actor, they were going to have a big career. Yeah. Sometimes you see a child actor and you think, yeah, I don't know how you've got this job, let alone any others. But you knew from day one that she was going to be a star.
Yeah.
She's kind of taken some time out, hasn't she? We haven't seen her in anything for a few years.
She had a kid, I think, so she's taken a bit of time off.
Has she ever been in a film with Jonas Hill?
Never.
Shame.
I'm going straight with my number two, so I'm going with a more traditional actor, Julianne Moore.
Good choice.
Great choice. Julianne Moore, for me, has delivered strong performance after strong performance. When I checked out her IMDb page, I noticed that there's quite a variety of roles. So when I think of Big Lebowski, mm-hmm, I always forget she's in that. So you've got the comedy, a real serious film, which is one of my favourite films ever made, Magnolia.
Brilliant.
You forget she's in that. She delivers an unbelievable performance up against people like Tom Cruise, you know, mm-hmm, who in that role is fantastic.
That's his best performance for me.
Yeah. Ironically, she's in Crazy Stupid Love.
Yeah.
As the mom to Emma Stone. So again, we see her in the comedy that she does really well. And then let's talk about the most recent role for her. So Still Alice. Have you both seen that?
See, I still haven't seen it.
I have.
Yeah. In that film, she literally delivers a performance that was worthy of an Oscar and no one else got close. Sometimes when I look at the nominations, I think this person's good. It's a close one. As soon as I saw that film, there was no one else that could get even half as good as her. She made me believe that she had that illness. It made me cry, you know, and there's actresses out there that can put on performances that make you laugh and cry, and she can do it. Mm-hmm. And I think for Julianne Moore, I mean, how old is she now? Probably
she's 40, in her 50s. 50, yeah.
I can't wait to see what she goes on and does, because she's got a career that will last another 20, 30 years. I can see her being like Helen Mirren and doing films when she's 60 and 70 and still looking brilliant and still delivering serious roles. Yeah. So she easily makes... She was going to be my number one until you'll see who gets there. But.
Well, mine aren't in order, so she's in my list as well, Julianne Moore. I think she's absolutely amazing. She's been nominated for 5 Oscars, finally won one for Still Alice. And as I say, I haven't seen it yet, which is shocking. I do need to. Some of the films that you've mentioned there, you mentioned Magnolia. It's not the only Paul Thomas Anderson film she did. She was also in Boogie Nights, and she's great in that as well.
Oh, my Lord, amazing, I forgot about that. Yeah, that's exactly. Ages old.
She was in Hannibal as well, and I thought she actually did a great Clarice Starling.
Yeah.
Now, people were put off because she wasn't Jodie Foster. People wanted Foster back, but she's great in that film. You shouldn't be judged because you're not someone else. Mm. You should be judged for your own work. And that was a really good, fun film, Hannibal. The Kids Are All Right. That's a really cool film as well. Have you seen that one?
Yeah.
Her and Mark Ruffalo. That's a great performance as well. She's impeccable, I think. I've never seen her give a bad performance. I don't think she's capable of it. She's been in shit films like Seventh Son. Even in bad films, she's always the best thing.
Yeah.
Because she's incapable of giving a bad performance. She's wonderful.
No, I completely agree on Julianne Moore. Just didn't make it into my list.
Mm.
And that was... It was quite... Because I've realised, chatting now, that the rule that I kind of put in place was I have to have really enjoyed the bulk of the stuff they've done.
Yeah.
Which is a flawed rule, because it generally means that only people with shorter acting careers may get in there.
That's true, yeah.
And I've only just kind of thought, actually, yeah, that's quite flawed. Mm. So my second choice is actually Jennifer Lawrence.
But then again, you know, talk about someone with a hit and miss ratio that's just off the charts. She's only done, I don't know, maybe 10 films, and they're pretty much all great.
So tell me why you love her so much.
Well, I mean, why not? Ever since I saw Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
I liked her before. I thought she was good. I mean, X-Men First Class, I thought she plays a fantastic Raven, Mystique. Mm-hmm. She really kind of nailed that role, and it was a difficult role to nail because I thought Rebecca Romijn actually did a very good job in the original films as Mystique. So she really kind of owned that. Hunger Games, not necessarily a film I cared for too much. I went to see it with my girlfriend and things like that.
Never seen them.
And, you know, they're actually enjoyable, and she's superb in them.
Sorry, I don't know if the listeners at home could hear some rustling there, and it's because old Mac in the corner is eating Skittles.
Sorry, I'm just eating some Skittles. They're really nice. I'm just tasting the rainbow. Sorry, guys. They're really tasty.
Try again, Adam.
Yeah, even stuff like The Hunger Games, which I don't really care for that much, but I've been to see it with friends and things like that. And she is the best thing in it by far.
She's great, yeah.
And she's just a fantastic actress overall.
Yeah. Have you seen Winter's Bone?
Yes.
She is so
unbelievable.
Good in that one. Yeah, yeah.
But she's just, even American Hustle, I did it as homework. Wasn't particularly a big fan of it, but I recognise the acting performances are great. And she, for the amount of screen time she kind of has in that film, she nails it.
Yeah.
Because she's not really one of the major players in it by that much of a distance, you know. You'll probably say Bale, Cooper and Amy Adams are much further ahead in screen time. But she just has this way of kind of capturing the screen.
She's magnetic, yeah. She's a magnetic screen presence.
And none more so than in Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah.
So she had to go in. I mean, like you said, she's done about 10 films in her career. Has she done a bad one yet?
Yeah. And again, even though Hunger Games isn't your cup of tea, she is great in it.
Yeah.
You know, she's not really done a dud yet. She, like you said with Julianne Moore, she missed out on my list by the skin of her teeth. She was just outside my top three.
Just a quick one here.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen The Beaver?
Directed by Jodie Foster. No, yeah. I haven't seen it, no.
She's in that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and she's bloody good.
Mm.
So that's one of those ones that you should check out when you get a bit of time. Is it my number one?
Yeah.
Sigourney Weaver.
Excellent choice.
At the end of the day, anyone that can deliver those performances from the Alien franchise and all the films. Okay, yeah. Let's be honest, not everyone likes Alien 3 or Resurrection, but you can't fault her in those films. Mm-hmm. She gives a performance.
Does anyone like 3 and Resurrection?
Not that I've met.
No.
Let's have a think for a second.
But anyway, yeah, she is outstanding. The problem is to justify it with other work that she's done, really, like Ghostbusters. What a great film. But she's not the star in that, and you don't really think she's done a great performance in that film. Avatar, she's not the main character, so she's pretty good. So I am purely basing this on the 5 Alien movies that we've seen. Alien and Aliens are masterpieces. There is no one else that could ever do that role like she has. She is absolutely unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And a word that I will not always use like masterpiece, but flawless is. There's no one else that can create the tension she does, the anger, you sympathise with her, you want to cry for her, and you relate to every emotion she gives. I've never looked at and gone, oh, this is a bit shit.
Mm.
She's easily my number one favourite actress.
Yeah, and it's interesting, actually, the way that you've chosen that. Because we've all sort of come at it from different angles. Like Adam's been saying, he's only looking for people who he's pretty much loved everything they've seen. I've just been sort of thinking broadly about people that I love generally, whereas you've picked someone who you love for a specific character that they've embodied over a certain amount of films. And it's interesting how different methods can bring you to different names, isn't it? But yeah, I can totally get on board with Sigourney Weaver. I think she's amazing as Ripley.
And that's why she cemented that position, because there are better actresses out there that have delivered such a different variety, but because she delivers that role so well, I honestly would feel wrong leaving her out.
Yeah, fair enough.
So fair play, Ripley, because that's who she is. She's not Sigourney Weaver, she's Ripley.
Yeah. Put the Skittle down, Mark.
Can you hear them still?
Yeah, every little rustle of the bag.
I'm loving these Skittles. Is it Adam's number
one? Go on, Adam.
Yeah, probably going to surprise a few of you, but I think Ben and Mark know how much I love this girl.
Who?
Aubrey Plaza.
Yes. Yes. 1,000 times yes.
Yeah, absolutely love her. Again, every film she's been in, I've generally loved, even stuff like Funny People.
Mm-hmm.
But Parks and Recreation is one of my favourite TV series of all time.
Yeah.
And she just has this fantastic deadpan style. And one of the key things as well for this is when you see her in interviews, when she's not acting, she's just being herself, she is hilarious.
Yeah.
Safety Not Guaranteed, I brought it as one of my favourite time travel films. And her performance in that is ace. Like, she just nails everything she does. Admittedly, most of the stuff she does is the same character.
Yeah, she plays that kind of
snarky. I was literally just about to say, she is the same person in everything she ever does. But
she's
does it
so
well.
Good at it. And she's even in Scott Pilgrim, which we'll talk about later.
There's a film of hers that I saw recently that I really enjoyed.
Life After Beth?
No, The To-Do List. Oh, have you seen that one? Yeah. That's a really great film. If anyone's not seen it, it's kind of set in the 80s, and she's a girl
very, very cool,
looking to lose her virginity and all that. It's a very good, funny film. And she's quite different in that, actually, because she's a bit sort of mousy and she's not the usual sort of snarky girl.
As Mark just said, their life after Beth, she goes opposite Dane DeHaan, and she does a great performance in that as kind of a girlfriend who's come back to life and becomes a zombie. Mm. And it's just, it's fantastic. Everything she does, again, she's had a relatively short career so far. Majority of it kind of in TV. Obviously, she was signed on to Parks and Rec for 7 seasons. So I'm looking forward to kind of seeing how she branches out now.
Yeah, and that's the thing. The key thing there is branching out. I think she needs to do more stuff like The To-Do List, where she doesn't want to continue to be typecast in those particular roles, because I think it'd be a waste of her obvious talent.
You do know that the biggest, strongest rumour right now is that she's going to be one of the lead roles in Clerks 3. I'm not joking. So there you go, she's gone.
It'll make me see it.
Ruined.
But, that's obviously they're not really in any order. One, but that's my top three.
Okay, cool. Mine aren't in order either. So my third choice is someone we mentioned just now, Amy Adams.
Nice. Yeah, fantastic.
I think she's wonderful. The thing I love about Amy Adams, again, I've mentioned this with other people, but I think she has this versatility that you don't often see in actresses these days. She can be the kind of mousy girl next door. She can also be the sort of the brassy, like Lois Lane. She
was
brassy reporter chasing the story. She can also be a complete sort of sex siren like she was in American Hustle. Oh. She's so broad. And I'd never seen her be that kind of sexy character until I saw American Hustle. Didn't necessarily know she had that within her range, but clearly she does. She can turn her hand to everything. And then you look at the other films that she's been in, things like The Fighter, The Master... Mm-hmm. Yeah, Her, she was in as well. Yeah. She's just got this list of legendary films
she's
with her name.
She's unbelievable on your CV. Muppets.
Yeah. Shame.
No, she was good in that. She was entertaining.
I haven't seen it. I'll take your word for it. But she's been nominated for 5 Oscars, and she's, fairly young. I think she's probably mid-30s, and she's had 5 nominations under her belt already. She's
crazy,
phenomenal,
isn't it?
Yeah.
She's on par with Julianne Moore already. She's like that. Five all.
And of course...
But Julianne's one ahead of it now. She's won one.
Of course, I believe she's set to reprise her role as Lois Lane in the upcoming Dawn of Justice, opposite... Every actor.
Yeah, every actor that exists. Yeah.
Because Zack Snyder's cast them all as various different DC characters to come in for 3-minute cameos in a 4.5-hour long film.
She was the one person I had out of the three that I would have... I just didn't quite make the top three for me.
Yeah.
But when you just read that list, I'm like, wow, fair play. She's not done a shite film.
Sigourney Weaver was close to my, my top list as well, just for her role in Paul.
But do you know what? That film was unfairly maligned, I think. I don't think it's a classic by any stretch, but it's a good, fun film. My only issue with that film is that the alien character, Paul, played by Seth Rogen...
Didn't look enough like Mac, I agree.
Well, there's that. you're absolutely right. But he's also basically just the alien from American Dad. Yeah. You watch American Dad. Exactly, it's just the same alien, isn't it?
Yeah.
Rip-off. Shame. Shouldn't say that. It wasn't intentional, I'm sure. Sorry, Simon.
Accidents. We love you, Simon.
Just before we close up on this, or go to the... go to the social media. We've mentioned a couple of people that just made our list. Are there any others off your top of your head that just didn't quite make the list? For me, it was Juliette Lewis.
Yeah.
She was very, very close to me because I love her so much in Natural Born Killers and From Dusk Till Dawn and so on.
Amy Poehler, but she hasn't really done a lot of film. Tina Fey, another one.
Yeah.
And, of course, Ellie Kemper, but again.
All sort of TV actresses, yeah.
The thing is, for me as well, Scarlett Johansson. Mm-hmm. You know, when I watched Lucy, she was outstanding in that film. The film itself didn't grip me, but she was fantastic.
Under the Skin. I saw that film. I thought that film was batshit crazy and also not very good, but I thought she was brilliant in it.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And then Lost in Translation.
Mm. Oh, awesome.
You know, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but Charlize Theron.
Charlize Theron's great as well.
So it was difficult to leave those out. Mm-hmm. So on that note, let's talk about the social media. So thanks to our guys on Twitter at STTE Podcast. We've had some suggestions this week. Nathan Gordon, who is at Nate's Gordon, Emma Stone, Jennifer Lawrence, and Natalie Portman. So basically, he's picked our three.
Yeah.
Good on you. Craig Jarrett, at Craig_Jarrett. Kate Blanchett.
Yeah. See, she's another one of those who I can see is brilliant. She's obviously very good at her craft, but I don't really like any of her films.
We need to talk about Kevin, was mesmerising. That was her, wasn't it?
Tilda Swinton. Yeah.
Oh, Tilda Swinton. Ignore me. Ignore me. That's someone I would have put.
Tilda Swinton is great.
Julianne Moore and Sandra Bullock.
Yeah.
At Zoe Hammonds, Natalie Portman, Nicole Kidman, and Patricia... Is it Arquette?
Arquette.
Yeah, she's very good. Mm-hmm. But I don't think she's done enough. I want to see more of her. She only does two or three films a year.
She's great in Boyhood, but she also stars in the current spin-off of CSI. in America, you know.
That's what I mean. And to be fair, I was saying she should do more. She did spend 12 years of her life on that film, so fair play to her. Johnny Worthless, at Johnny Worthless. Emma Stone, Rose Byrne. I love her.
Rose Byrne's very good.
Yeah. And, yeah, Charlize Theron. We'll talk about her. And his wife's suggestions he wanted to put forward. Sandra Bullock, Reese Witherspoon.
Reese Witherspoon, yeah.
Yeah, Megan McCarthy.
Who?
He's put Megan McCarthy.
Who?
I don't even know who that is.
I know Melissa McCarthy is.
Perhaps it's autocorrect, I don't know. A couple more. We've got James, which is at Chill Dude 2002. Drew Barrymore.
No.
Jennifer Lawrence. And this is one that I thought Adam might pick. Sarah Michelle Gellar.
It's because of his love of Buffy.
Pretty much, yeah. Again, not really good enough film for me to choose.
True.
Well, definitely not enough good film.
And finally, Matthew Fisher at CouchPotato_MVP. Anna Kendrick.
Yeah.
Very, I love Anna Kendrick.
Yeah. In a few years, I reckon she could knock one of mine off.
Yeah. Up in the Air. That's a great film. She's unbelievable.
Again, it's another one of those actresses where her personality in interviews as well.
She's lovely.
It's just ace.
Yeah.
Jessica Chastain. Talk for me, Ben.
Jessica Chastain.
Thank you.
Jessica
Shithead. And Scarlett Johansson. But yeah, Anna Kendrick.
Yeah.
I love her.
Me too.
Is it time for next week's topic?
Yeah.
Last week you said, when giving us this topic, that you wanted to get away from us being a bit too sausage-festy.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. I like sausage. I really do enjoy sausage.
Brilliant. Where's this going?
It's one of my favourites. So we are going to go back to the roots of having Sausage Fest. And this is going to be probably the most challenging one we've ever had. We're going to do it. We're going to follow it up with the actors. Top three actors.
Makes sense.
It needs doing. Yeah. People say to me, why have you not done this yet? Good luck, because I'm telling you now, it's going to be fucking hard.
Yeah, I agree. We've been to see Mad Max Fury Road, the fourth in George Miller's dystopian franchise of Mad Max. Wow. Wow. Adam.
Wow.
Adam, instant thoughts. What's going through your mind?
Fucking crazy.
Yeah.
It is one of the most insane films I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, literally just insane. I'm not sure whether he should be locked up.
George Miller.
For coming up with this.
Yeah.
There is so much happening in front of your eye. Don't get me wrong, it is an entertaining piece on screen. And I will say, having a day to think about it, I really enjoyed it.
Mm.
As a piece, as an action sequence, as a
visual spectacle.
A visual spectacle, I really enjoyed it. I mean, we'll get on to a few bits and pieces later. Tom Hardy's accent could do with a bit of work.
I don't know what that accent was. Because one minute he sounded like he might be trying to do Australian. The next minute he was Bane. And then the next minute he was just generic Cockney. So I don't know what that accent was.
Was he filming The Craze at the same time?
Could have been, yeah.
I felt it was very, very exhausting, but in a good way. I came out of that cinema like my head had just been blown off.
Mm.
I don't think I've stopped thinking about a film like this since I left the cinema for a long, long time. Probably Inception, where I came away having to think. But I wasn't thinking in the way of, oh, what was all that about? I was just thinking, what the hell just happened for 2 hours?
Yeah. And let's give the people sort of a breakdown of what occurs. Charlize Theron's character plays sort of a henchman for this villain.
Imperator Furiosa.
She's Imperator Furiosa, and the villain is Immortan Joe. And she goes out on sort of oil runs for him, but one day she decides to nick his 5 wives that he uses for breeding purposes and take them to her homeland, this green place that she talks of. While along the way, she encounters Mad Max, who has been kidnapped by some more of Immortan Joe's henchmen, and they're using him as a blood bag. They essentially siphon off his blood to sort of power their minions. They end up coming across each other, and he then helps her get these girls away from Immortan Joe. That's the basic premise. It's effectively a 2-hour car chase. And by God, you know, the word you used then, Mark, was exhausting. I couldn't agree more. I couldn't put it more succinctly than that. It's breathtaking. At the end of it, you feel your heart going because you've watched nothing but explosions and car chases and accidents and this, that, and the other. It's It's a mentally taxing film, but in a good way.
Yeah, I mean, most of the films you see nowadays, say, for example, the big blockbusters out there like Avengers, like Turtles, the big films, Transformers, that have taken a lot of money at the box office, there's a build-up for a good 45 minutes until you get an action scene that's then worthy of, like, oh my God, look at these mayhem explosions. You get it from within 5 minutes of this film starting, and I'm not joking, it stops about after an hour.
Yeah.
Then you get a little bit of dialogue and a breather, and literally, before you know, you wouldn't even have time to go to the toilet and back. It's bang again for another solid hour. Yeah. And it's literally, that is the way the film works. That's the format. Bam, 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 breathe, bam, bam, bam. But unbelievable for me.
And you mentioned the dialogue there. I'd be surprised if Tom Hardy had more than 10, 11 lines in the whole film.
That's it.
So why you felt the need to put on some odd Australian accent, I'll never know.
For one page of text, yeah.
But I've never seen a film like it.
No.
I don't think you ever will, until they do another one like it, but that's about it. It sets the bar for an action film higher than anything else we've seen in years.
Yeah, and the fact that something like, I think the estimate is 80 to 90% of it was all real stunts.
That's frightening.
There's only a little, I think the CGI in it, Charlize Theron's character has half an arm, so they had to use CGI to erase half her arm, but I think that's basically the most substantial CGI in the film. All the car chases, all the accidents, all the explosions, there's bits of guys, they're kind of on these big stilts, type things, or big poles. They kind of look like pole vault things, and they're swinging back and forth off the back of cars that are going 100 miles an hour, and you're thinking, that must be CGI. It's not. They were real stuntmen on these big fucking poles racing through the Namibian desert. It's insane.
And this is why films going forward should take note and use practical effects, because it works.
Yeah.
And like you said, you were certain this is CGI. How the hell would they do it? Well, it's called spending time, going out there, investing money and effort, and not just using a computer. And visually, you're not going to recreate it on a computer. You fault it. Like we did on Avengers, we're saying that bit looks shit, this bit.
The past 20 years, we've seen bad CGI ruin too many films.
Yeah.
And to go out there and actually do practical stunts, practical effects, they nailed it.
Think how pissed off we would be right now if we were sitting here saying that was a 2-hour car chase film, it was amazing, but there was this one bit where the CGI was ropey and it let it down. Yeah. How furious would we be that the film was ruined by something like that, like we did with Avengers, as you say. The fact that it was pretty much all in camera, it was all practical effects, it just makes it feel more. It's more of a film to me. It's less of, you know, ones and zeros on a screen. It's a real film. It breathes. It lives.
I didn't realise it was that percentage until you just told me. So that's really bloody good to know, and it gives you credit to them all. Even the costumes and the makeup and the set design is fantastic. They've gone out there, they filmed, they spent a long time researching, finding these places to film.
Yeah.
And even the detail down to the hair, it's not CGI. They've not created these monsters on CGI, and they look fucking awesome. They remind me of bloody the baddie off He-Man. Remember back in the day?
Was Skeletor. Long hair.
Yeah. No, not Skeletor. I forgot his name, but he looked just like that. And it's that set design that they spend the bloody effort on. Mm. And all the costumes are horrible. Some of the faces they created with the makeup. Yeah. I was literally, look at the state of that.
Gruesome.
Brilliant.
I think the sort of counterbalance to it, the reason why there's less of that in a film of this size, people are less likely to do practical effects, is because the amount of time it takes in post-production and so on. The fact that they completed filming this 2 years ago, but the amount of post-production that they needed has meant it's only just come out now. Yeah.
And I'm glad that they've given that time, because it paid off.
But that's odd, though, isn't it, when you think that they went out there, they did all the effects, they didn't need the CGI, and it took 2 years to come out.
Mm.
You'd think that doing CGI, putting all those effects in, building it into the film, making sure it's perfect, would take longer than 2 years.
I think with this, it's because they filmed so much footage. They had I'm sure I read somewhere it was like 400 hours, something insane like that.
To filter through all of it.
Get through all of it, find the best bits, find what works, bring it all together, because they have these hundreds of hours of stunts and flips and crashes and etc. to then bring that down to a 2-hour movie is a hell of a process. Whereas if you're doing it via CGI, you just go, well, we actually didn't need to film any of this. We could have done it all on a computer. Yeah.
Karg, that's who it is, from Masters of the Universe. Karg. So go and Google him and then tell me it looks just like Immortan Joe. Did you know that was also the original baddie from Mad Max?
Toe Cutter, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's frightening.
Mm.
That's probably how they saved him looking so old. But
no, I didn't. It's shocking, is it? I've never seen a Mad Max film before.
I have seen all three of them, but not since I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go out my way to watch all three originals again quite soon.
Thought you guys would be a bit more shocked.
Shame.
I've only ever seen the first one. And I revisited it a couple of weeks ago, ready for this, and it was still as good as I remember. But now, like Ben said, I'm going to go and do the trilogy. Yeah. Yeah.
The only one I can actually remember anything of is Beyond Thunderdome, because I remember Tina Turner being in it. But otherwise, I don't remember anything of the film trilogy.
Shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the actual visual effects. We've talked about how good it all looks, yeah. but the actual amazement and scale of this.
Yeah.
The actual time they spent on the actual vehicles amazed me. You could see parts of other, I think they were Volkswagen Beetles and stuff, made up into these massive trucks. Yeah. And these were all built and made, and I think you can go and see them at the moment in London and stuff. It's absolutely mind-blowing. Mm-hmm. Again, like you said, there's no CGI. These vehicles are going through the desert at these speeds. The amount of time and effort they spend should be done a lot more, because those vehicles looked amazing.
Yeah.
And so original.
Call them rigs, don't they? All the different rigs they had.
It's not often that I'd actively go out of my way to find a concept art book of a film.
Oh, yeah.
But this would be one that I would.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I'd like to see that.
I'd like to see where it started, what other designs they had as well that didn't make it into the film.
Yeah. Talking about the design, it's not just the cars as well. Mark, you've alluded to it a bit with the characters in it. I think my favourite character visually and aesthetically was on the front of one of these massive rigs, or rather on the back of one of these rigs, they had a load of drums and a load of drummers beating sort of war drums as they were chasing Max and Furiosa. And they also had a guitarist who was on the front of the rig, you know, hanging off these wires, playing heavy metal guitar, kicking out these riffs, and his guitar was also a flamethrower, because why not?
It was amazing. And it just gave you the soundtrack at that scene.
Yeah.
And he was leading it all with this fat bass line. It was quite musy and sort of really thick, heavy bass.
Yeah.
And while it was playing, it came in conjunction with the actual filming you're seeing, and he was hanging off and in the face of the camera, and I was loving him. Yeah. I was like, this guy is so rock and roll.
But with the with that band, I didn't realise until there was a close-up of the drummers drumming that music you were hearing was actually in the scene. I just thought it was soundtrack, and it wasn't until you see the drummers drumming and then see the guitarist, oh shit, okay, this is actually supposedly playing in the desert, this music.
That sound as well in that film was epic.
Mm-hmm.
It was very loud. It was louder than bloody Interstellar. It was full on bass. It was like Prodigy at times. And then it was like,
well, it was Junkie XL was the guy who did it, and he was, you know, he's an old sort of musician of the Prodigy ilk.
Ah, there you go then. But yeah, unbelievable. And my chest was raging at times. You know, you could hear that bass going straight through. And like you said, then you see the guy with the guitar pumping out the sound, and you're just like, this is awesome.
I think my only issue with the sound mix was Immortan Joe wears a mask, and there were times when he would speak and I couldn't hear and or understand him. I missed a lot of his dialogue because of that mask, and I thought that was a strange choice to not turn his sound up a bit and actually hear him through
the mask.
I
was thinking, is it the fact that you don't need to hear it to show that he's got this power? And all? I was thinking that yesterday, it's not like a little error, like, oh, actually, let's just muffle him. Because that's what I was saying. You know, he's above and giving all the water to people. He's like, and you're like, what? But I didn't need to know. It was just saying, look, I'm fucking God, and here's what I'll give you what I want.
Yeah.
Good point, though.
Yeah.
Subtitles when you get the Blu-ray.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's highly unlikely that an old master like George Miller fucked up and didn't turn his head. I imagine it was a conscious choice, but I wanted to hear what he was saying.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there was very few lines in the film. I'd quite like to hear them.
I'm glad you picked up on that, really, because that's the one thing. We love Tom Hardy, I think, all
big
of us.
Big time, big time.
You know, he's fantastic in this as visually with his mask and everything, the strength of him.
Yeah.
But I was a little underwhelmed by him for being, he's considering he's Max.
Yeah.
So considering, I think you said he only had probably one page of A4 to read, I was left like, well, I didn't actually get any character from him. I didn't really learn about him. I didn't have any backstory. I didn't really find out much about him at all. And I was left thinking, don't get me wrong, this is visually incredible and it was non-stop action and fantastic, but I did find myself a little bit like...
But I think the assumption is we know the backstory having seen the other film. Yeah. Even though it's not a direct continuation of the first three, I think the point that George Miller has made is if you're familiar with who Max Rokitansky is, we don't need to then go through the whole crap of his kid dying again. We already have established the character, so that's why I think there isn't much of that.
We just got a lot of shots of him looking confused at times.
One of the things that I'd have liked them to establish was the time in between. Because obviously this is technically a sequel, isn't it, to the third one. I'd like them to establish the time in between, because how long has he been out there now? Because that would explain why he's more silent than anything. Because I like the fact that he was a bit of a silent badass.
Yeah. And I think it was really Charlize Theron's film.
Yeah.
I thought her as Imperator Furiosa, she was unbelievable.
She was the main protagonist throughout this film, more than Max to me.
Yeah.
I think he was wasted in that aspect. And when I saw her, I was well more bought into her, and I felt we had a bit more character development and story development because of her. Max, for me, I'm saying it now, I felt he was wasted a bit. I know, but fuck off, Mark, you know nothing, that's fine. But I do genuinely...
He's having an argument with himself.
Yeah. No, I know I will get abused for this online, but it's true that I just felt he was wasted. I just think we didn't see enough of him.
Yeah, I thought he did a good job. I thought it was fine.
I sit somewhere between the two of you. I don't think he was wasted per se, but I would like to have seen him have some more agency.
Well, for the first hour, he just carried along. We don't even see anything, do we? Yeah. It's just, he's actually attached to that vehicle.
Yeah, it's true.
And he was Bane, like you said, with his mask on, doing his old... And like you said, the accents.
It wasn't quite right. But Charlize Theron, how great was she?
Fantastic. And that's the thing, I went into this film and there's been quite a lot of uproar this week about feminism and all this in the press.
Yeah.
You can't avoid it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to read anything about the film, but you couldn't avoid that. Went into the film, everyone said she puts on a performance that's, you know, Oscar worthy. She was absolutely magnificent.
She was brilliant.
And she gave everything to it.
People have been saying that it's the most sort of badass female role since Sigourney Weaver as Ripley.
Yeah.
And I can see that.
Yeah.
I can really see where they're coming from when people say that. I think she's so good in this.
There's a bit obviously because she had one arm.
Yeah.
She actually had the bionic arm off at one point, and she just hit him
with
like the stump of the arm.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so cool.
Do you know, talking about the feminism thing, the fact that you've got the women who she's taken away, you know, the fact that they've decided they don't want to be things, they don't want to be Joe's property anymore, that in itself is a feminist message. The fact that Charlize Theron's character is a badass and doesn't need Max's help, she's grateful for it, but she can survive on her own. There was something else as well, I was reading all these different things, and something that someone pointed out on a website as being a feminist thing. You know when Max is shooting at that vehicle that's coming towards him, and he's missing?
Yeah.
And Theron just kind of looks at him, doesn't even say anything, looks at him as if to say, I could hit the shot. And he, without even batting an eyelid, just gives her the gun and lets her use his shoulder as the rest for the gun. It's like, that in itself, this person was making, is a feminist statement, that he knew she was going to be better at it. He was happy to be an arm for her to rest on. And I like that. Yeah, apparently, apparently George Miller... Are you familiar with the Vagina Monologues?
No.
It's a big play that's a big feminist thing that's been performed in the States for years and in the UK. And apparently the writer of the Vagina Monologues was called in as a consultant on Mad Max because George Miller wanted a woman's perspective. He wanted to say... You know, how would a woman in the real world react to these scenarios? So she advised him on that, which I think is fascinating.
He's invested his time to make sure that he doesn't get criticised.
Yeah.
But
plus, let's not forget that during the final car chase scene when they're going back to the Citadel, every person fighting against Immortan Joe is a woman, aside from Max and
Nux.
Yeah, loads of the guys have all been killed off.
Yeah.
Didn't realise as well until today that Lenny Kravitz's daughter was in the film.
Zoe
I didn't
Kravitz,
know that.
Yeah. Yeah, she was the short-haired girl of the five wives. Yeah,
and I think I remember you saying yesterday, Ben, that this is the one film that... What's the model called that's going out with Jason Statham?
Rosie Huntington-Whiteley.
That you found a very... Can I say good? She was very good in this film?
I thought she was very
good. Yeah, she was very good. Yeah. And before that, I associated with Transformers. So fair play to her. She delivered a massive role where usually you think, oh, here we go. Fair play to her. All those girls are strong.
I don't know. I thought a couple of them... Did nothing.
Pointless.
Yeah, it didn't add much to it. I thought Zoe Kravitz's character was good. I thought Rosie Huntington-Whiteley was good. And I thought the red-haired girl who fell in love with Nux, I thought she was good. But the other two didn't do much for me.
So what of Nicholas Holt then?
I thought he was great. And I'm not a fan of him in any shape or form. I've never really liked him in anything. I think he's flimsy casting for the Beast in the X-Men films. I think he's one of the weaker points in those films, which I love otherwise. I just don't think he's a particularly good Beast. So I wasn't expecting much of him in this, but I really liked him. I liked how sort of wacky and crazy he was to begin with, but how he sort of came around and became a good help to Max and to Furiosa. I really enjoyed him.
He was ace. I thought he was really good in this. And I echo your sentiments a bit there. I never really thought much to him as an actor. But yeah, I just thought he was very strong in this.
Because I didn't know the story, I was really scared that he was going to turn around and fuck them all over.
Yeah.
I had this horrible feeling, like I was warming to him. Like you said, you see this change, he fell in love with one of the girls. You could see him really warming to the team and becoming more. And I just thought, please don't fuck them all over. Like, that was my only fear.
I think my only issue with his transformation from being one of Immortan Joe's henchmen to then helping Max and Furiosa is that the transformation was too quick. You know, he was all gung-ho. He was on the back of their war rig, ready to kill him. He failed in his mission, sort of collapsed on the floor a little bit. The redhead girl said, don't worry about it, it'll be all right. And then all of a sudden he's on their team. It's like, you know. The fact that he was bred, his sole purpose was that he was bred to be war fodder for Immortan Joe. And then he changes his mind because some girl touches his head. I thought that was a little bit abrupt.
It's frightening how I looked back at the director's previous work today.
Oh, Christ.
I know we're always going to associate him with Mad Max, but the last one we did before this,
yeah.
do you Do you know this?
Happy Feet 2.
Happy Feet 2. Happy Feet. And before that,
Babe Pig in the City.
This guy's done his research. You know what I mean? This guy has done those three films. How do you go from Happy Feet 2, a little dancing penguin, to this on that scale? It's remarkable.
Yeah. I like the idea that he sat there and he's gone, you know what, since Mad Max, my career's took a really weird turn. What should I do now?
My fear,
I'll do the Mad Max.
Yeah. My fear is now he's got the world at his feet. People are like calling him to do absolutely everything. He's like, sorry guys, I'm going back to Babe 3.
Well, my fear is the fact that he's 70 and he's probably going to die soon. I'm less concerned about him doing a run of bad films than the fact that he's an old fella.
My fear is that everyone sits around and goes, Tom Hardy's Australian accent's a bit weird, and he gets Mel Gibson back in.
I don't think it was George. It might have been George Miller himself who said that that Mel Gibson was now too mad to be Mad Max.
This was originally going to come out in 2008, I read today. And do you know who's going to be part of Max? Who's going to play the part of Max?
Heath Ledger.
This guy's on form, mm-hmm. Yeah. And that frightens me, because he would have been great.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of the effort he put into the Joker, imagine his character on that.
Would have been a very interesting role for him, yeah.
Probably better than Tom Hardy as well.
I like how he went, oh, can't use him anymore. Let's get the other Batman villain in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll put a mask on him.
Jim Carrey. They asked Jim Carrey. That would have been interesting.
Should we try and sum this up? Because I think we've talked about how great it is.
Yeah. What, sum it up and score it?
I'm up for it, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, I'll go first then.
This will be interesting.
As good a visual spectacle as I've ever seen. It's fantastic, breathtaking, miraculous film with great stunts, amazing direction. I think it's going to get nominated for a lot of Oscars, below the line categories, sound, costume, all that kind of shit. I think Theron could potentially get an Oscar nomination. The plot was rather thin. Max didn't do enough, so I can't give it the sort of 5 out of 5, 10 out of 10s people have been giving it. For me, it's an 8.
I'm going to say it's the best action film I've seen probably since Predator.
Mm-hmm.
Visually, there's nothing else that's going to touch it for years. You just completely summed it up. Little story development. Character development for me was weak. 8. I want to say 9,
yeah.
But I'm really looking forward to buying it on Blu-ray and rewatching this because I think it's going to get better and better in time, and I'm sure in a year's time I'll be like, oh, it was a 9. But
visually brilliant. One of the craziest films I've ever seen.
Crazy.
But I loved every second of it.
Mm-hmm.
8. I literally, towards the end, there was one moment where I thought, I feel like I've only been in the cinema 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it did fly by, didn't it? Yeah.
If you're listening to this right now, please go and see this at the biggest screen you can find. We know what the world's like. People download films. Don't. Go and see this in a decent cinema. Yes, the cinemas are expensive. It might cost you 12 quid, but it's worth it. It's worth every penny. Go and see this in an IMAX. Go and see it in the largest screen, the best surround sound.
See it in 3D as well.
Do. It is spectacular, and it'll be the best money you spend.
Me, Ben, and Mark have all spoke before on how, I think actually on the last episode, how we regret not seeing certain films in the cinema.
Mm-hmm.
This would be one of them.
Big time.
Massively.
Yeah.
8.
8 out of 10. So, next time round, we were going to be reviewing the new George Clooney film Tomorrowland. But the reviews haven't been that great. We've kind of lost our love for it a little bit, so we're not going to bother now. When we were at Mad Max, obviously we sat through half an hour worth of adverts and trailers. True. One of the trailers was for the reboot, remake, whatever you want to call it, of Poltergeist. Now, Mark was sat next to me. I don't think I've ever seen him so angry. He honestly wanted to spit at the screen. So I don't know if it's punishment or what, but instead, next time round, we're going to review the new version of Poltergeist.
Shame. Boys, last week we did rewatch of Mac and Me.
We did.
We enjoyed it. I fucking loved it. I really did. I thought it was absolutely unbelievable.
Garbage.
And since then, we've entertained and joked about the idea of doing Mac and Me 2.
Yeah. We didn't joke. We said we were doing it.
Okay, well, yeah. I think it started as a bit of a joke, but it's now becoming reality.
Not from us. Oh, that's all right then. Me and Adam were on board from day one.
I've got the buy-in. I've spent a bit of time thinking of a title because we need to start the ball rolling and get some tweets, get Facebook, get maybe a crowdfunder, maybe get, you know, a lot of actors on board, start discussing directors.
Yeah.
We've got to really think about this. I don't think the original director's up for it.
No.
I emailed him and he hasn't replied.
About George Miller.
that would be the next right thing. But
Mad Mac.
We're open for... there we go. So I've given it a little bit of thought. Let's just discuss this week the title.
Yeah.
And then maybe next week possible directors and who we can get in to play the film and mm-hmm. stuff. So at the moment, we've got a few ideas. So we've got The Mactrix. So a bit like The Matrix. So it's, you know, it's a bit of a sci-fi film.
Yeah.
We've got Mac-Man Begins. So it's a prequel. Yeah. So we get a bit more than that. Mac to the Future.
Good. Solid.
And Mad Mac, I like. That's straight thrown in. Not just Mac and Me Too.
Well, what about Mac and Me Too, Mac in the Habit?
I like that. Yeah. See, this is it. But for you both, I've come up with a title. Listen to this. You know what it is?
Mm-hmm.
Mac and Me Too, Return of the Mac. So, what do you think? Mac and Me Too, Return of the Mac. Spelled like differently that. So we don't get sued.
Yeah.
Happy?
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Brilliant, that's sold.
And also, I'm glad we didn't go the prequel route, because what we're going to be doing in a second, boys, is, you know, I said that I was going to have a go at putting together a script.
Yeah.
I've written the first scene.
Amazing.
It's not a lot. It's
already?
Just, yeah. It's not a lot. It's just to sort of quite literally set the scene. It's only a side of A4, but I just want to get it going, let everyone know what's happening.
So what's the time span on this? Just, I mean, how far along are we? Is Mac now an adult? Are we calling him Big Mac?
He's a teenager. He's not quite a Big Mac, no. He's a teenager.
I like that.
So, should we have a go now? Do you want me to present you with the first page of script?
This is all live. I have no idea that this was happening.
Right. So you've got a page each. It's one side of A4.
Okay.
There are two speaking roles. Adam, you're the first speaking role. Ronald. And Mark, you're the second speaking role. Eric? Yeah. I will read out everything that's in bold, which is the stage directions.
Okay.
So, here's your sheets.
Just to let people know, I can't read.
So, chaps, I don't want you to read it now. I want you to read it live. So, are we ready to get started?
Yeah, and I just need to say, we need to burn these as soon as this is done, because this is hot property.
Yeah. The fact that we've read it out live on air.
I was going to say. The originals are worth a lot of money.
Right, so here we go. We open on a yellow screen and pull out slowly to reveal that we are looking at the golden arches of McDonald's. Inside the busy restaurant, we see two people behind the counter. Store manager Ronald McDonald and our mysterious alien creature, Mac. Mac wears a McDonald's uniform and has achieved one star. He is now clearly going through a difficult teenage phase as he has an earring and a wispy moustache. Ronald clearly isn't happy.
You can't keep doing this, Mac. This is McDonald's, the greatest fast food restaurant in the world.
Close up on Mac's little alien face, special sauce dripping from his mouth.
These delicious Big Macs, made only with the finest beef, are for the paying customers. This is not your own private buffet.
Mac stares vacantly at Ronald, almost as if he can't understand English at all because he's an alien.
I'm sorry, Mac, but this is it. You're fired.
Ronald points to the exit, and Mac slowly begins to waddle to the door. As he reaches it, he turns around to look at Ronald, and a single tear rolls from one of his alien eyes. Ronald looks at Mac and has only one thing to say.
Shame.
We cut to a typical teenager's bedroom. Posters of rock bands on the walls, clothes on the floor, and empty Big Mac boxes as far as the eye can see. Mac lies motionless on his bed, barely breathing. There's a knock at the door, but Mac doesn't stir. A voice comes from behind the door. It is Eric, Mac's disabled best friend.
Mac, come on, man, let me in.
Eric continues to bang at the door, but Mac still doesn't move. Something is wrong. With a loud crash, Eric is able to smash his wheelchair through the bedroom door.
Oh my God, Mac! Wake up, buddy, please!
It's now obvious to Eric that Mac has overdosed on Skittles. There's only one thing he can do.
Quick! Someone get this guy a Coca-Cola!
Fade out.
That is unbelievable.
That sets the scene quite nicely.
So there you go. Yeah.
No, I'm a fan of that. That's a good opening scene.
Because the way I see it is this, right? So this film came out, what was it, about 88?
Mm-hmm.
And Mac was a small lad. He's now a teenager. He's big into the Seattle scene, because this would have been the early 90s. He took Kurt's death really hard, and that's when he started hitting the Skittles, you know what I mean?
Of course, yeah.
He's been listening to Pearl Jam. Yeah. He's got Converse on, big jeans.
Time. Big time, all of that. So what do we think? It's a good basis to start from,
isn't
it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I'd be interested, you know, where we go from there, you know. Is it Mac turning his life around now? Is that what we're looking for?
We've not got that far in discussions yet.
Mm-hmm. I'd like
me
to
and
see
the
him
producers.
Make... Okay. I'd like him to basically be in a band, because he loves Nirvana.
Yeah.
And maybe have some mates with him and call himself Big Mac and the Fries.
That's pretty good.
I like that.
Pretty good. I like that.
Or the Mac Nuggets.
Oh, yes.
Nice. Yeah.
So I know you've been good enough to take some time to give us this. Is it okay if I promise the listeners that we get another part to this story in 2 weeks?
Yeah, I can do another part.
Yeah?
Maybe I'll just give them a taste. Maybe I'll do it like a scene sort of midway through the film, something of, you know, a bit different.
Yeah, we don't want to just give them the film live on air.
No. But yeah, I think I can put together something else.
Next week, we're going to talk about casting as well,
yeah.
Who we think should be playing Mac.
Yeah.
I spoke to Gandhi. He ain't up for it.
Not up for it. What, because of being dead and all that?
He's just not up for it. He said it's not going to give him the sort of press he wants.
Shame.
And his bum is not right on his face, so no, sorry, mate, like you said.
Who's going to play Ronald? That's what I want to know.
Well,
Paul Giamatti.
Ah. Actually, I've recently learnt that at a McDonald's nearby to where we live, Ronald McDonald will soon be appearing.
This is true.
All right, let's get down there.
In person. So I think if we try and get an interview with him, ask him if he's up for doing the sequel.
Yep.
He might sit there and think, well, what do you mean? I don't think I've ever been in that. So, well, you have, Ronald. Come on.
Yeah.
He's credited as
check
yourself.
Instagram. We'll get some photos with him.
Yeah.
So, we'll go along to that and we'll see if he's interested.
Nice.
Watch this space. Mac and Me 2, Return of the Mac.
Last episode, we had a very cool competition. It was to win a lovely piece of Monsters Dark Continent artwork. And the question that we put out to listeners was, who directed the first film in the Monsters franchise? And the answer was, Adam?
Gareth Edwards.
And the winner was, Mark?
Josh Morris, at Movie Guy Morris.
Excellent. So that prize will be on its way to you soon.
Congrats.
Right, guys, the year 2009, skip back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good rapper there. I might try and audition for a Mac and Me 2 soundtrack. Anyway, 2009, a massive year for films. I can't believe how the choices are getting more and more hard, aren't they? You really are getting a choice of about 8 or 9 films a year at the moment.
Yeah.
This hasn't been easy. I'm going to throw it straight to Adam. Give me your film of 2009.
Okay, Crazy Heart.
Whoa.
Interesting. Interesting pick.
It was one of those films where I didn't see it in the actual year it came out. I saw it a couple of years later.
Mm-hmm.
And I was blown away by it. I'm quite a big fan of country music anyway.
Yeah.
And Jeff Bridges is an absolute god.
Yep.
Did he pick up the Oscar for that?
Yeah, he did. He was unbelievable as Otis Bad Blake. For those of you who don't know what Crazy Heart is, it's a film about a washed up country and western singer. He was an alcoholic. He's called Bad Blake, and he falls in love with Maggie Gyllenhaal and her sort of 4-year-old son as well. He starts creating a family, but loses them due to his alcohol addiction again. And it's all about him trying to get his life back on track. It's a fantastically moving piece of cinema. And usually, I'm the kind of guy who comes in to skip back in time and goes, "Yeah, it's a good film, but I want action. I want the best cinematic experience." But this hit me. This film hit me.
Really? See, I haven't seen it, so this makes me now want to go out and find that film.
And Jeff Bridges, again, just puts in a just unbelievable acting. I mean, he always does.
Yeah.
But this is his best.
And the film, I believe, was directed by a chap called Scott Cooper.
Scott Cooper, yeah.
And after that, he did a film called Out of the Furnace with Christian Bale that was just okay. And he's now working on a film called Black Mass, starring Johnny Depp. It's the gangster film starring Johnny Depp. And I don't know if you've seen the trailer, but it looks like it might be the first good Johnny Depp film in a good long while. So I'm intrigued to see how Cooper does.
Tusk.
We've established that Johnny...
Yoga Hosers.
Fuck you.
Shut up. We've established Johnny Depp hasn't been a good film circa 25 years, something like that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, this film is crazy. I can't rave about it enough. It's a great film.
And I love Jeff Bridges, but I love Maggie Gyllenhaal as well, so I'm definitely going to check out this film.
The soundtrack itself is worth listening to as well, because it's fantastic and will make you like country music.
Does that surprise you both, Crazy Heart?
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that one.
Yeah, massively. I'll say in a minute who I thought you were going to pick.
Okay.
Me or you, Ben?
I'll go, and I'll just say this to you, and you can guess the film. You fucking prawn.
Brilliant. District 9.
District 9.
Oh, that meant Chappie.
I love... I got my years wrong. I love District 9. And we discussed this. If people want to go and listen to our review of Chappie, go back a couple of episodes and you'll hear that we didn't all love that much. And one of the reasons was that Neil Blomkamp seems to keep making the same film over and over again. And he needn't, because he already hit the jackpot with District 9. Not only was it a brilliant sort of dystopian sci-fi action film, it was a great drama, so much so that it was nominated for Best Film at the Oscars. Yeah. You know, this wasn't just some throwaway piece of film. It was art. It was a genuinely great film. Sholto Copley is so good as Vickers van der Merwe. And he's done a lot of crap in recent years, Sholto Copley, but he really broke out of nowhere in that film. And it's just a great idea. Not only is it a brilliant sci-fi, but it's also a bit of social commentary. It's based on the whole sort of apartheid situation in South Africa, but replacing sort of these aliens with black people. It's fantastic. It's a film that I rewatch probably once every 6 months, and will continue to do so because I just bloody love it.
Brilliant film.
It's a cracking film. It really is. And like you say, we discussed it on the Chappie review, but Blomkamp seems to love his own film so much that he's remade it.
Yeah,
three or four times.
Yeah, each time slightly more inferior than the last.
Using either the upper classes or robots.
Yeah, because that's all he seems to know.
So my choice.
Yeah.
Not an obvious one. 500 Days of Summer.
Great film. Mm.
It's an offbeat romantic comedy, and basically the story is about a woman who doesn't believe that true love exists.
Yeah.
So the sad part is that a guy does then fall in love with her.
Yeah.
Quite simple. Have you seen it, Ben?
Yeah, I hated it.
Oh, okay. That's fine. This is what this section is about. This is what I want. This is what it's all about, this section. Directed by Mark Webb, who obviously then went on to do The Amazing Spider-Man. But Zooey Deschanel, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, fantastic acting from both. The soundtrack is brilliant. You've got The Smiths, Black Lips, Simon and Garfunkel, Wolf Mother, and also Zooey Deschanel actually plays some music and sings on it as well. The delivery of some of the dialogue in that film is fantastic. You see every emotion that you probably relate to if you've ever been in a big relationship with a girl. I'm ready for Ben now to attack me and say it's dreadful, but I absolutely loved it. I watched it a lot, and I think it's a fantastic movie. And over that whole year, for me personally, I enjoyed it the most.
I can understand why people like it. Personally, it made me want to vomit because I just thought it was saccharine shit.
There we go. I'm glad we are not on the same page.
I'm a bit annoyed because I just want Ben to tell us what he really feels.
Don't hold back.
Because he's clearly held back on that one.
Yeah.
I loved it. Mm. Shame. One of the lines that I really liked, which is really, really brutal, is when Summer's talking about they wake up together and Summer says, I just woke up one day and I knew. And I remember Tom's character says these exact words, knew what? And she says, what I was never sure of with you. And it's literally like rips your heart out.
See, that's why it makes me want to vomit. That is outrageous.
Do you want me to change my choice?
Yeah.
All right. My favourite film that year was Watchmen. There you go. How's that? Brilliant film.
Yeah, great. I love Watchmen. Brilliant.
Well, you're welcome to your opinion.
Thank you. I'm glad that's annoyed you.
So what did you think I was going to say?
I thought you were going to say Zombieland.
Zombieland's a great film. But
it is.
No.
Okay, so we've had some come through on Twitter. Emily, which is at Emily McKay 1138, she agrees 500 Days of Summer, but she also said Drag Me to Hell.
They are two very different films.
Horror.
No, I don't think so.
Rhett Wesselfels, which is at Rhett is awesome.
What's the betting that his surname is actually nothing like that, Adam?
Best of Elves.
Ben, this is a film I thought you were going to say. Moon.
Moon is a hell of a film.
I really thought you were going to...
Duncan Jones directs it brilliantly. Sam Rockwell, so, so good in that.
Yeah.
Brilliant film.
RMB Podcast have said, which is at Dragon Deadlight, is Ponyo. Which
Ponyo.
Is fantastic.
Studio Ghibli film, very
Ace
good also.
Film.
Yeah.
And they've also said, or Zombieland. A lot of people want more than just one. It's tricky.
Shouldn't have to.
Eleanor M, which is at Eleanor M88, Fantastic Mr. Fox. That's a really well-made film.
Really?
Yeah, it is.
I don't know. I just think in this day and age, what are we doing that for?
I love Ben. Do you want to say something?
Oh, no, it's just, I didn't really, I'm with Ben on that. I didn't really see a point. So.
Yeah.
Fantastic, okay. Mr. Fox.
M, which is at Free the Leaves, Star Trek.
Yeah, yeah. I see that. Star Trek was awesome.
Good or film. Sherlock Holmes.
They can't have all. It's Star Trek.
I know.
And they certainly can't have all that. Come on now.
And finally, Margie, which is at Margie Up Church. She's put, Squirrel. I mean Up.
Up was awesome.
Up is fantastic.
Up is a superb film. The fact that Up and Ponyo came out in the same year.
Crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
That was a good year, though.
Yeah, it was a good year. And we'll be doing it. And we'll be doing it all over again next year. It gets, like you said, Mark, it seems with each passing year it gets harder and harder to make a decision on this. And then obviously some years you just give up, like you did this year. so I'm looking forward to 2008.
So last week, set the rewatch, guys. Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yep.
Probably one of my favourite films of all time. I mean, it's my favourite film of 2010.
Yeah.
Which kind of made me choose it as the rewatch. I fucking love this film.
Yep.
So I'm going to throw it out to one of you first. Mark.
I totally agree. I absolutely love this film. Edgar Wright's masterpiece. Fantastically edited. Brilliant story. Brilliant casting, just a perfect film. Absolutely love it.
You're not going to get an argument from me. And I think it is as good a combination of director and source material as you're ever going to find. I don't think anyone would have done a better job with Brian Lee O'Malley's comics bringing them to screen than Edgar Wright. He just has the exact correct sensibility for it, and he nailed it.
Yeah, it's the perfect partnership. And the thing is, it's so... Because Brian Lee O'Malley's graphic novels are so... batshit crazy as they go on, he's done a fantastic job of stripping that back and giving you the key points and producing it on screen. That is the finest adaptation of any graphic novel and comic book you'll see.
It's a big shout, but you could well be right on that.
I just don't think you'll beat it. I think the fact that they've managed to keep all the key things in there, remove some of the more further left field stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And keep the crux of the story generally the same. And the casting. He's literally nailed everyone on the casting. That was one of
what? that was the first. That's
an exclusive for Skip to the End.
I didn't know that.
Not in that way. probably the wrong words to use. But he's cast everyone perfectly. He's not nailed them, but he's cast everyone perfectly.
See, I would agree with you, but prior to seeing the film, I wouldn't have, because I didn't like the casting of Michael Cera.
Mm-hmm.
He always strikes me in films as a bit of a wet lettuce. And Scott Pilgrim on the page is a bit edgier.
Yeah.
A bit, you know, a bit sort of more of a punk aesthetic to him. So I thought Cera was too much of a wet, wussy man for it. But I think he pulled it off. I think he does great in the film, as do all the actors. But I was surprised.
And you couldn't really think of anyone else playing him?
Not now, no.
Yeah, now you've seen it, you'd be like, actually, no.
But he's never, ever not been that character in everything he's ever been in.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to say, it is true. You want him in a film, he's that guy. He's like Stifler. He's only going to be him in every film.
Yeah, if you see Arrested Development or Superbad, Michael Cera is Michael Cera in every film. With one exception, Youth in Revolt. Have you seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic film.
Yeah,
it is. I love him with a little tash.
That's it, because he starts playing that sort of suave guy and with his little tash and all that. And that's very different. He's not really done anything like that before or since. So I'd like to see him push himself a bit more with that sort of stuff.
But he is great
in Scott Pilgrim.
The thing I like about Edgar Wright is that my favourite TV series ever, and it definitely is ever, is Spaced.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of his kind of first pieces of work when they give him some money and investment. You will not see a better edited and directed TV series for the budget he worked on for that long ago. It is absolutely magnificent. So you see it on a larger scale with more money and more investment. Every little scene that is edited in Scott Pilgrim is done in perfection.
Mm-hmm.
The way that the music kicks in, so you'll see probably Scott in a scene having a bit of dialogue and a bass line will kick in. You think this is a hall, it's just going into the next scene. It pans out and he's actually playing the bass to that bit. It's all those little tiny details he's spent. The bit when he's fighting the previous boyfriends and defeats one of them and they turn into coins. It's done perfectly. Yes, it's CGI, and yes, it's a lot of animation and all this, but it looks brilliant. It's so well done. All the fight scenes are really well choreographed. Every little bit that is edited is brilliant, and it just depresses me when I watch the film, if I'm honest, because it makes me think, why did Marvel, what happened? Because I want to see what he would have done with an even bigger budget and a bigger story, and Marvel's back in, and Disney's back in, and it fucks me off, if I'm honest, because it's like...
That he got taken off Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, what did we get instead recently with him? The World's End, which is probably one of the worst films I've ever seen in my entire life.
That is not true. You do not believe that.
I do. I hate it.
Don't believe it. It's one of the worst films you've ever seen in your life. you think it sucks because they set a high bar, him and Peg. Yeah. And I agree. I think it's very disappointing.
It's so bad.
I still to this day don't believe Edgar Wright directed it.
No.
You refuse to believe it.
Yeah, I think he just put his name on it and someone else did it.
Yeah, maybe.
It's such a come down. But we're focusing on this film. It's perfection.
Something you said there as well about the music kicking in. There's one scene that kind of stays in my mind for that, and it's when he's fighting the third evil ex, Todd Ingram, Brandon Roth.
Yeah.
And he knocks him through that wall, and then just hear the bass kick in.
Yeah.
And he's got like the little sound waves coming out from the wall.
Yeah.
When he starts the bass battle. That is such a cool scene.
It's amazing.
It is very cool. All the battles are great. And we talked about the actors briefly there. We talked about Michael Cera, and then you've got Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who is absolutely brilliant in the film. Mm-hmm.
I love her. Yeah. I'll officially say it on this podcast. She is absolutely unbelievable. You will fall in love with her. If you've never seen this film, honestly, you will fall in love with that character. She is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
She's everything you could ever want.
Yeah, she's a bit of a dream girl, isn't she?
I absolutely love her.
But even down to the smaller performances, like one of my favourites is Chris Evans as one of the evil exes. He is so good.
There's a bit that me and my friends always quote, and it's just that bit where he goes, that's actually hilarious. I just love it a bit. I love the film. And like you said, some of the evil exes they just throw in there are so cool.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Evans and Brandon Roth.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of superheroes in that film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you think about it, went on to do quite good. Kieran Culkin in that film as well.
He's hilarious.
Done all right for themselves, isn't he? Brandon Roth and...
Kieran Culkin is really, really funny. Yeah. He's not done a lot.
Yeah.
He's always lived in his brother's shadow, really, but... Yeah. Fair play to him. He makes me laugh.
He's hilarious in that. All the interaction between the two of them when he sort of kicks him out of their flat because he wants to move his boyfriend in.
A film that I think it must be this film she's only ever done. Ellen Wong, who plays Knives. How good is she?
Yeah,
you know, she's great. Such a convincing, like, over-the-top, worryingly over-the-top girlfriend who gets onto the kind of lines of being obsessed.
Mm-hmm.
But you believe in it and you're feeling for it because he's just obviously met someone else that's better.
And do you know what's funny about Ellen Wong, her character Knives Chow, is that the film was being written at the same time the final books in the series were being written. I think book 6 was in process. So Brian Lee O'Malley discussed with Edgar Wright and said, this is what we're intending to do, but you know, you go your way, I'll go mine. And apparently, initially, Edgar Wright had written the script to say that Scott would get back together with Knives Chow at the end, rather than getting back together with...
Ramona Flowers.
Yeah. But then the... book, I think, came out whilst the film was still going through testing. The book obviously had him going back out with Ramona, and he decided to change it so that it matched the book. But initially, he was going to go back together with Knives, which I think would have been an interesting way to go.
There's a great scene with Knives, actually, where I think it's Todd Ingram punches him, and the highlights actually come out of there.
Yeah, the blue.
That looks so cool.
It does, yeah.
The detail in this film is like nothing else. And like we said before, not many people spend that much time on it. And you know that Edgar's spent so long in the editing room. And it pays off. It's actually gone really well with Mad Max this week. It shows, spend more time after you've filmed in the edit suite and you get the rewards.
Yeah.
There's some really good things as well that Edgar Wright did with this film that Zack Snyder is well known for doing. Whenever he takes comic books and puts them onto a screen like Watchmen, and it's sort of panel shots.
Yeah.
Where the opening of a scene is a panel from the actual comic or the graphic novel. And there's nothing better than this kind of when you see that. And you've actually read the book, the comic books and stuff. You're like, looking at this thing, that's awesome, man.
Yeah, I love to see that.
The soundtrack as well is fantastic. Beck is majorly involved in this.
Yeah.
We've already spoke about soundtracks and Scott Pilgrim. I think, Ben, you had it as one of your top three, didn't
it? It was one of my top three soundtracks of all time. And as you said there, Mark, the fact that Beck basically wrote all of Sex Bomb's songs, the band within the film. And they're great songs as well. Some of them... I still listen to now, you know. It's a soundtrack that's worth picking up.
Definitely. And the fact as well that all the cast members learned to play the instruments as well, I think it took them over a year. But I think Michael already played bass, but
the rest
of the members of the band learned it. And fair play to them. It looks great. And the battle of the band, you're hearing these songs, and you believe in it because they're actually playing the right chords. And it makes a difference.
It does.
Yeah, big time.
It's a very, very cool film, isn't it, guys?
Yeah, I think from a purely aesthetic point of view, you won't get a better looking, better sounding film. Mm-hmm. But then that's coupled with a really interesting, fun story and great acting as well. It ticks all the boxes. And one of the people I love in it is Jason Schwartzman as Gideon Graves. And he's an actor that I've never had much use for, to be honest. I find him a bit of a wet lettuce as well. But I love him in this film.
Yeah, again, he just crops up in things.
Yeah.
But in this, he actually serves a purpose. He does. He plays a great role.
Mm-hmm. We're quite spoiled as well, because we obviously, you know, my love for Mary. You know that I absolutely love her. Aubrey Plaza, you mentioned earlier, is in it, so you get that. And then we also get Anna Kendrick.
Yeah.
So we are spoilt for the, you know, the most upcoming talent of probably female generation, which also fitted in nicely with our actress section.
Yeah.
This is like, this is good.
It's as if we planned it, but
strange, isn't it?
It's a shame Mac and me too has to come in and ruin everything, but no, it's brilliant. There's nothing else I can really say. This film's just everything you could want.
It is brilliant. The shame of it for me was the fact that it didn't recoup its budget at the box office. So it is technically seen as a bomb. It's a box office bomb, which tarnishes Edgar Wright's bomb, indeed. It tarnishes Wright's legacy a little bit, because in Hollywood you're judged on your successes, not your ability.
Success.
Yeah.
And it was a huge flop, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think it cost something like $60 million to make, and it got something like $35 million back at the box office. That said, apparently it has recouped its costs back on DVD and Blu-ray sales, because it's been a huge cult success. It's one of those that people, as the years go by, are just going to gradually love more and more and keep coming to it.
Plus, like, it's had about 7 different releases on DVD.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Kevin Smith films.
No.
Please don't put this in the same category as a Kevin Smith film, Mark.
Christ. I think rating this film could be one of our highest rewatches. It's never going to beat Blade Runner, because that was a perfect 10.
Yeah. Although, I don't know, Adam might give it a 10. Well, yeah, I don't think all three of us are, but I think Adam might. We'll soon find out.
Adam, start it off. Your 10. Rewatch. 10, there you go.
Yeah, you know my rule. If it stands the test of time, it's a 10. And it has.
Yeah.
Did you lose a girlfriend for this film?
Yeah, I've said before. One of my ex-girlfriends didn't like it. We broke up a couple of days later.
Good.
One of 8 ex-girlfriends. Adam? Ben? Even?
Brilliant. Looking right at me as well, he was. I love this film. I think it's fantastic. Again, using your rule, Adam, I loved it at the time and it has stood the test of time. So if I was you, I would have given it a 10 as well. The only reason why I'm going to give it a 9 is because if I put that up against Blade Runner, I can't say that it's as good as. But it's still a brilliant film.
Fair.
So it's 9 out of 10 for me.
It's 9 out of 10 for me. Mm-hmm. I don't need to say anything else. It's a 9.
It's a 9. Well,
unbelievable.
Deserved. Yeah.
So, Ben, it's your choice for next time's rewatch.
Yeah, it is. Now, when we did Mac and Me as a rewatch, we broke the rules because Mark lied to us and claimed that he'd seen it before. So it turned out I was the only one who'd seen it, which broke our little in-house rule that 2 people need to see it. So now that we've broken that rule, fuck it. Let's end the rule. What I want to do this time is focus on a film that I believe none of us have seen.
Is that how crime works?
You break a law once and then the law doesn't exist anymore. So now what I'm saying is, let's broaden the rules of a rewatch. A rewatch effectively is the opposite of a brand new film review. So we go and see Mad Max, that's our review. A rewatch is an old film. It doesn't have to be a classic. It can be an atrocious film. It can be a cult film. It can be something we've all seen, one of us have seen, 2 of us have seen, whatever. As long as you can justify it as falling into the category of rewatch. Mm-hmm. So to that end, I want to go with another cult film up there with Mac and Me. Have you guys seen or heard of a film called The Room?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard about this.
I've seen it.
You've seen it?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's excellent. I've not seen it. Mark, you've not seen it either, but you've heard of it.
Yeah.
For those who haven't or are not aware of it out there in listening to us, this film came out in 2003. It was written, directed, edited, produced, and stars a guy called Tommy Wiseau, or Wizzo, however you pronounce it. A man of indeterminate foreignness. He's never actually revealed where he's from. He claims that he was brought up in Louisiana, but apparently people have dug deep.
It's going to be terrible.
People have dug deep and claimed that he was born in some Eastern Bloc country in the 50s.
It's the worst film of all time.
Well, a word that or a phrase I heard uttered with regards to it is, it's the Citizen Kane of bad movies. It's an absolute atrocity. Apparently, it's like a love story about a love triangle, isn't it? But it doesn't make any sense. You can't really decipher what it's about. A cult has sprung up around it to the point now where in the States there'll be like midnight showings. It's like Rocky Horror Show, where people go dressed as their favourite characters and they bring props and all that kind of stuff. It's a proper cult film. It's meant to be an absolute disgrace. And Adam, you'll know this if you've seen it. So I'm thinking this could be our next Mac and Me.
No, we're not remake. We're not going to bring out a sequel. I've not got time.
The Room 2.
Yeah, the bedroom. Next time round, we're going to debate The Room. So all of our listeners out there, we've had a lot of great response for Mac and Me. We had people who went and watched it before they even heard our episode reviewing it because they wanted to know what we were talking about. So I want more of the same. I want our listeners to go out and watch The Room. I want to see your tweets. I want to see your posts on Facebook to let us know your thoughts. And we'll let you know ours on the next episode.
Oh, it's fucking awful.
Next week, The Room. Questions and answers time. I'm just going to go straight in. That's what she said. Right, okay, here we go. New listener, I think, David McCabe, 32. Why have they made the new Supergirl show look like a mix between Dawson's Creek and Ally McBeal? And have you seen the trailer? Or?
I have seen the trailer, yeah.
He's got a point.
Yeah, I like the bits when she's in costume and she's battling and whatnot. And I think it's from Greg Berlanti, who's the same producer who's done Arrow and Flash. So I kind of trust him to do it right. I also don't trust him because he also did Green Lantern, but we'll put that aside. He's managed to prove that he can do superhero TV. So the bits when she's in costume, she's flying, she's battling, I'm down with it. But the bits when she's in her workplace, you're right, it does have a horribly Ally McBeal feel. And it might be, and I'm purely speculating, but it might be because they want to gear it more towards a female audience. Because I would say, generally speaking, Arrow and Flash are probably more geared towards males. I know a lot of women who enjoy both of them, and they are very good shows for everyone, but I think they want one that skews more female.
Yeah, I think they're just hedging their bets, I think, on that. Mm. And there's probably, I mean, is it going to be on the CW?
No, I think it's CBS.
Do they still own the rights? Because I know, obviously, the big thing about them trying to draw everything in for Legends of Tomorrow as well. Mm.
It's separate from those, I believe.
It's actually going to be separate from the universe as well.
Yeah.
Shame.
I don't know enough about it, but maybe just give them a chance to do something a bit different. It looks a bit different. Those shows work. They were very successful. Why not? Let's not just make a female Flash.
I've not
actually
watched the trailer for it yet.
Let's not make a female Flash. Sorry, I shouldn't be saying that. Luke Calvary. Calvary _ Luke. Who would win in a fight between a bear and a shark? We do say we'll answer any question. Mm-hmm. I'm happy with that.
Well, you've got to ask yourself this.
Where's
it taking place?
In the sea, then I'm going to go with the shark.
Yeah.
If it's on land.
Let's say in a ring.
Do anything.
In a ring? Yeah. Well, the bear. Yeah. Because the sharks can't live.
There you go. There's your answer.
But by the time they move the shark from the ocean to the ring, probably going to be dead.
Here's a question for you. Do you think there will ever be a boy born that can swim faster than a shark?
Alan.
How could I kill a tiger armed only with a biro?
Alan Borden via Facebook. You're in a zombie apocalypse. Who do you pick to help you?
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah?
From Zombieland.
Superman.
Anton from No Country. No one's going to attack you. He's an absolute psycho. Throw him at him.
I quite fancy my chances of surviving more than you two.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because I've got Superman.
Yeah, but he's got the Twinkie Man.
I thought you meant because you're fatter than us and you'd just survive longer.
Well, no, because I imagine you can't run away from anyone.
What?
You hate exercise.
Oh, well, yeah. I think I'd bloody have to, though, wouldn't I?
You'd prefer the zombie to eat you than walk.
Yeah, it's easier, isn't it?
Ah, this is quite good. Relevant as well. Richie Harris on Facebook. The best female performance in a single movie?
Christ, I don't know if I can answer that one right here. No, yours would probably be Ellen Sigourney Weaver as Ripley, wouldn't it, Mark?
No.
Without thinking about it, I'd probably say Portman, Black Swan.
Interesting.
But if I thought about it, I'd probably come up with a different answer. So, yeah.
Give something now and we can come back with something else.
To bring that back next week, actually.
Let's bring it back next week because I don't want to jump on anything with that.
I'm going to say mine now.
Go on then.
Kathy Bates in Misery. That's going to take some beating.
Dirty Bird. Oh.
See, if she did a lot more, she could be in the top. You know, she's missed out.
Mm-hmm.
I need to let her know. Ian Young, if you could go back and review any movie for Skip to the End, as a review, and it's the first time you've ever seen it, what would you like to review? Any classics out there that you wish you could then talk about?
See, I'd just be hitting the big ones again. I'd want to have seen Blade Runner when it first came out and review it, and, you know, Star Wars A New Hope.
That's why we've got the rewatch. It gives us the chance. Yeah. Exactly. But for the first time,
probably either Clerks 2 or Mac and Me.
Ah, that's a great The Thing. I'm going to just because I would be literally just jizzing.
Yeah.
I'd like to George Lucas, our Guardians review, and do it again.
Yeah.
I don't think we did it. We weren't as accomplished.
We were new. It was our first attempt.
This is it. We weren't the season pros that we are now.
Exactly.
Lucy Andrews on Facebook. Relevant. Worst actress.
Anne Hathaway.
Yeah.
That's take allowed. That one to the bank. I ain't even considering that one.
An actress that I hate.
That is difficult.
The worst actress. Who do I always moan about? Who's the one that you hate that does an Imitation Game?
Keira Knightley.
Yeah,
but I don't like hate her as much anymore. No. I think she's been good in the last couple of things I've seen.
Who's your choice then?
That's difficult because I don't want to criticise anyone too much.
Why not?
Because it's not what I'm about.
Adam's got no answer.
No, that is a difficult question to answer. I'm going to bring that back next week as well.
Fair enough.
I want to think about it. Really. Oh, Kevin Smith's wife, dreadful.
Jennifer Schwalbe.
Yeah, dreadful. Awful. Yeah. Terrible. Mm.
Does she qualify as an actress?
She's in films, so yeah.
Jeez.
Well, films is a bit.
There you go. I've got to bring that word. One back. Oi. You like Kevin generous. Smith?
Nope.
Yes, you do. She's just trying to be cool.
Nope.
Adam Phillips. Mark, you haven't hated anyone for a long time or wished anyone dead.
Shame.
Pick someone. That is true, actually. If I listen back, I don't think I have.
You used to wish someone dead on every single episode.
Yeah.
And you've not done it in a while.
All right, let's pretend that I've done this for a reason. I've wanted the hate for maybe 6 episodes I haven't done it to build up to an ultimate want dead.
Mm-hmm.
James Corden. I absolutely hate that fat wanker.
He's a bell end, isn't he?
I hate him.
Do you know what? He's going down a storm in America at the minute because he's presenting a nightly talk show in the States and they're loving him.
Yeah, he's going down a storm on a pie. I absolutely hate him. Yeah. I really do.
Yeah.
I never, ever want to be in a room with him. I detest him. Everything about him. Yeah. He's not cool. He's not great. I want him to flop.
He's at the Comic-Con next week. We're interviewing him. An hour. So hour special. Corden special.
Please die. At Flowers88... Oh, this is a bit more for you. You're the gamer. Your most played video game of all time. Not your favourite, your most played.
Yeah.
I can answer this. Tetris.
Yeah.
I think if I had to go by hours logged, possibly if you counted all the Pokemon series as one game, probably that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's Tetris.
Either Final Fantasy VII or...
In the meantime... I'll go with mine. Street Fighter 2 Turbo Edition on the SNES.
Great game.
I didn't stop playing that for about 2 years.
Or Devil May Cry 3.
Nice.
I racked up so many hours on that game.
Nice.
Last question from Pedal Boards with a Z. Favourite Star Wars movie of all time? Simple.
Yes, Jedi, isn't it? No.
The new one.
Phantom Menace. I absolutely love that.
It's Empire. We all know it's Empire. I've just realised my answer for best female performance in a film, Uma Thurman, Kill Bill 1.
Mm.
Not so much the second, because I don't really like the second, but she's unbelievable in the first Kill Bill.
Cool. There you go. You've got your answers. Yeah. Keep your answers coming in. Facebook.com/...
Oh, keep your questions coming in.
I prefer questions.
Sorry. Yeah, questions. Facebook.com.
Is next week like Jeopardy?
That'd be awesome. Do it, why not? Facebook.com/skipsTheEndPodcast. Email us, podcast@skipsTheEnd.co.uk, or the most common one, Twitter, @STTEPodcast.
Next week, literally, send in all your answers and we'll come up with questions for them.
Do you know what? If you can, do it. That'd be funny.
So that brings us to the end of yet another Skip to the End podcast. Lads, how's it been for you?
Just can't believe we're at episode 21, if I'm honest. I'm still thinking, whoa.
It's crazy, isn't
absolutely
it?
Absolutely insane.
We're nearly at the year one.
We are edging closer and closer to our anniversary special, which will be sometime in August. So let's not get ahead of ourselves. On our next episode of our proper podcast, we're going to be reviewing, Mark...
We are interviewing Poltergeist. The
we're interviewing the Poltergeist. Crikey.
Yeah, but
we're getting
an exclusive one.
We're getting a medium in.
We're going to review the remake of Poltergeist, which I'm really... I just thought... I'm pissed off. I hate it already.
Brilliant. 0 out of 10.
Yep.
Done. We're also going to be having a rewatch, which is The Room, cult film. If you're not familiar with it, go and Google it, Wikipedia it, IMDb it, find out about it, watch it, and we'll talk about it next time round. Adam, what's our topic?
Best actors.
Best actors of all time. That's going to be tough.
Top three. That's going to be tough. Top three.
I was going to make it five, but I thought, do you know what? Let's really challenge ourselves.
And we're also maybe going to talk a little bit more about Mac and Me Too.
Yep.
Return of the Mac.
Potentially another scene coming up as well.
Yeah, yeah. I'll see if I can put together another scene. I mean, they don't just come to me. It takes work. You know, I'm a craftsman, you realise.
I mean, you're not a... Yeah, obviously, you're not a well-renowned writer. You can't just do this over a weekend.
No.
Yeah, no. This is the film that will make him that writer that then goes on to do even bigger things.
So one Sunday in February of next year, lads. Oscars?
Yeah, that's what we're aiming for.
Put it in your diary, yeah?
Oh, I presume we'll be hosting as well.
Maybe.
Also, I've noticed a lot of... I think Ben picked up on earlier that there's been a lot of love for Mac and Me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, joking aside, you can go on our Instagram, Skip to the End podcast. It's our most liked picture this week with him holding a can.
Crazy.
Of Coke. It's been one of our most downloaded episodes, and I've been getting a lot of hashtags with Mac and me, and let's just do it. If you really are on board with us, you might even want to be in the film. We're going to need a dance scene at McDonald's again. Of course, yeah. Because they're not, that's not a one-off.
Yeah.
Hashtag Mac and Me Too.
Yeah, hashtag Mac and Me Too. Get on it. We're also going to be doing Skip Back in Time. We're down to 2008.
Yeah.
So I'm sure that's going to be a tough one like they are every year now. And also, before that comes out in 2 weeks, next week we will be putting out a new MCM Comic-Con special. We're going to be attending the Comic-Con down in London, a three-day event. Plenty of big names in store. We've got cast members from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Gillian Anderson, star of the X-Files, and Hannibal is going to be there. Who else is going to be there?
Arrow.
Cast awesome. Members from Arrow.
Richard E. Grant.
Yeah.
Boise.
Can't Absolute forget Boise. Loads.
So, it's huge.
So next week, Boise cast.
The flagship one.
3 episodes in 3 weeks, guys. You know what I mean?
We do spoil you sometimes.
We do too much. It's too much.
And do you know what? I'm going to say it now. Set myself up to look a twat. But I'm going to find you a cool little present to give away on next week's episode. I'm going to hassle people. I'm going to find a cool present to give away on the MCM special. Yeah. So come and listen.
Yeah, and if you listen to any of our older episodes, or once you've listened to this one, please do go onto iTunes and leave us a rating. Leave us a message. Tell us how great we are. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, it's nice. It's like a little pat on the back.
Yeah. So see you next time.
See you later.